Welcome onto the podcast today, and alongside my co-hosts James and Jackson.
Hello, hello.
Thank you guys for having me.
Of course, and thank you for this opportunity. I'm very honored for having you on here today on this episode. So how'd you get into like the game development?
Yeah, so for me, I started when I was 12, which is 10 years ago now. I just crossed the 10-year mark of making games. So when I was like any other kid, I liked video games growing up. Video games are cool, right? Of course they are, obviously, duh. And I thought so too. Me and my friends would talk about ideas for like Minecraft mods that would be cool, or we'd come up with like random video game ideas when we were hanging out and just for imagination and just to have fun and just to talk about stuff. I was always intrigued by the idea of being able to make games and stuff, but I thought that it was something only like adults and like smart people could do, and I was neither of those, so I just thought that I had no shot at making games ever. And then when I was 12, I was talking with this friend, and he was telling me, "Yeah, I make games on my computer." I was like, "What? You do what?" And he's like, "Yeah, I've got this software. It's called Blender, and I make games on it, and it's free." And he showed me some videos of like animations and stuff in Blender. And I was like, "That's insane." And so the next day, I downloaded Blender, and started making games in there. I spent a year just having fun with it, just making random little prototypes and kind of learning about modeling and animation and just all the basics of like visual scripting and stuff. And then after about a year in Blender, I decided that I wanted to try and start making mobile games and, more like high fidelity 3D type stuff. And so that's when I started looking into other game engines. And at the time, Unreal Engine was pretty much the only engine that had like integrated support for like a visual scripting method. So they had Blueprint. And so at the time, I was 13, and the idea of learning how to actually code seemed really daunting, but the idea of visual scripting seemed much more palatable. So I decided to go with Unreal. It's also, was at the time famous for being like the most graphically advanced and high performance engine on the market. So that's how I started using Unreal, and then I'd been in there for.
It was definitely like a new experience for you then. It was like all brand new to you. But then you got the hang of it over time, I'm assuming.
I mean, I would say so. Yeah,
You
I think
wouldn't.
I've
Okay.
gotten all right at it.
I
I
mean.
tried it myself. I tried one at make a game in Unity, and I was just looking at stuff, and I was like, okay, well, what is going on here? It was like looking at, like, I've also tried Blender recently as well, and there's so many buttons and stuff, I just have no clue what's going on.
Since we talked about game development and what inspired you to go into game development, are there any like pieces of media that inspired you as a creator? Like, was there something like a film, game, or piece of music that inspired you to like create, to like, spread your imagination through the world or something?
There have been different inspirations over time. I mean, it's kind of difficult, if not impossible, to like pinpoint one specific thing. But I mean, like early on, I liked mobile games. I would play like Asphalt 8, and I'd play, I don't know, Cut the Rope. And so like that's the kind of stuff that inspired like some of my early, mobile games. And then I got into like Five Nights at Freddy's for a while, and that's what got me into at the start getting into like horror and stuff. I don't know. I lots of different, I kind of took little just like little pieces of inspiration from and, incorporated different things into my own games, from like different art styles that I'd seen in games or different design characters or that they'd tell their stories. Like, for example, the way that FNAF does storytelling through like the lore and stuff. I thought that that was really, really cool when I was like 15. And so I incorporated a lot of that style of storytelling into some of my earlier horror games, like My Beautiful Paper Smile or my other horror games that I never talk about that were complete trash. So,
So essentially mobile view, essentially.
I mean, well, there were some mobile games that inspired me to make some mobile games. Yeah. And then, as I got out of the mobile scene, You know, there were different things that kind of inspired me. So it's changed over time.
I mean, we all get different inspirations from all sorts of places. So yeah. Yeah, that's, as a creator, I can definitely relate to that, especially with FNAF, since, like, it was really unique when it came out. Like, it was simple, but, like, it also, like reinvented, like, how we tell stories in video games. Like, you basically just show, don't tell, and it's really great. So, yeah, I agree with you. FNAF was a huge... huge inspiration.
It was definitely a takeover sort of thing. It really took over the internet. I mean, it still has, you know, it's got a massive,
it's still huge,
base.
Yeah.
It's got a movie.
Yeah, it definitely has. It's had a big impact.
Maybe we could see a Tutu Charles movie.
I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, I've talked to a couple people.
That would be very, very interesting.
There.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm sad now.
Sorry.
It's okay.
All right. Is there anything you want to ask, James?
Okay, yeah. We've already touched on this subject, so the question was, what was your favorite mascot horror title? But you've already said that you liked FNAF early on in your development stages.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'd probably have to say FNAF, because that's pretty much the only one that I've actually played. I have played most of Bendy and the Ink Machine as well. Trying to think. Yeah, FNAF would probably be it, because I've played more FNAF than any of these other games. So
yeah, I'd probably be about the same, yeah.
That's pretty understandable. FNAF is, there's like, what, like, as of the recording of this, like, 10 FNAF games right now?
I lost count a long time.
There's too many, yeah.
I think it's like 10 or 11 if we're not counting DLC or expansions. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I've been following FNAF.
I think
so
I
long.
Tapped out after like the fifth one.
Oh my god. I don't blame you.
But I played those first five, and I think I beat all of them. Except for maybe there might have been one. I don't know if I beat the...
He's better than me.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
I suck at that, man. Damn.
You suck at FNAF?
Wait, what?
Anywho, All right.
But yeah, I remember when I was younger, my little cousins used to play it, and I used to play FNAF like all the time. It was one of the only games I ever played, and they never used to be able to get past night four, and I always had to go onto their like tablets and do it for them, and I had to beat like all the custom nights and stuff.
Were you playing on mobile?
No, they were. It was like I think they were called Kindle Fires, and they had it on them. But yeah, like a Kindle type thing.
I thought those were just for like books or something.
No, I had a Kindle when I was growing up.
Dang.
You can play mobile games on them.
Yeah, you can play some things on there. I remember having them.
All right, yeah. So the main inspiration for Choo Choo Charles was Thomas, you said, correct?
Yes.
So
yeah. That was kind of the big one.
Yeah, I mean, everyone likes Thomas the Tank Engine, am I right?
I mean, I remember him. Yeah.
I always loved him from when I was younger. Anything. It was that or Bob the Builder, I'm pretty sure, when I was younger.
Oh, Bob the Builder.
Oh,
man.
I liked Bob the Builder too.
Yeah.
that was one of my other classics. Favorite.
Bob the Builder. anything else that actually inspired you into making this such a unique game concept for Charles?
Yeah, so kind of the inspiration around Charles stemmed from, so I was kind of seeing a lot of these mascot horror games, or I mean, at the time they weren't even called mascot horror games. That wasn't a term that existed, but I was seeing all these popular horror games, and I was kind of observing how they oftentimes were based off of something nostalgic, something familiar that people already kind of knew and already had maybe some fear of, or, you know, something like that. You know, you see it with FNAF, you see it with Bendy. They're based off of familiar characters and themes. And so I was trying to think of some kind of a character that I could create for my character that would be familiar, some sort of a nostalgic spice to it. And so I realized that there were any horror games that played off of like kids' TV shows, and everybody has watched kids' TV shows as a kid, you know. So I just went with a character that, you know, I was familiar with and that I really liked growing up, which was Thomas the Tank Engine, of course. And I was, as I was thinking about it, I was like, you know, trains are cool. There's a lot of people, adults, who are really into trains because they're cool, you know. And I was thinking about the different gameplay mechanics that you could have, you know, based around trains and tracks and switching directions and mapping out routes and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I was thinking that would actually be kind of fun. And so I figured it'd be cool to have train gameplay and a train enemy. And then from there, that's when, as I was kind of trying to come up with the design for Charles, I remembered there are these animations by an animator on, he's on YouTube and TikTok and all over the place, called Tom Coben. And he's done all of those animations of like Spider Thomas, of where it's like Cursed Thomas the Tank Engine. And so he's got these animations with the design of Thomas the Tank Engine with like spider legs and a giant spider abdomen and a snake neck and all this crazy stuff. And so I liked the spider leg aspect of that. I figured that would fit really well into the concept that I was building. And so that's kind of where the whole general design came from for Charles.
I remember your first video about modeling and rigging Thomas, like how you used like IK animations to like make procedural, like make a procedural walk cycle for Charles. Yep. I think that was my first introduction to your project, and like, yeah, it's just, oh man, sorry, I just got like a hit with like nostalgia for brief moments.
Nostalgia for the spider train.
I feel nostalgic for the train,
bro. So wait, before we move on to the next question with Jackson, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I just wanted to ask, like, is it hard with game development and coming up with these ideas?
You know, it really depends on the developer.
Oh. Okay.
So, like, I am very, very specific with the type of ideas that I will greenlight for myself to develop. I've got a new game that I'm working on, that I've been working on since July. July is when I first kind of came up with the concept. And I mean, I spent 2 months just in the early planning phase, just trying to see if this would actually be a solid concept to continue developing. And I spent, I don't know, 6 months before that in research, trying to come up with like sort of a list of new criteria, what I was going to, or for what my new concept needed to have. Some developers, they'll just be like, oh hey, what about if you did this and that and that thing, and then they're like, oh yeah, let's make it into a game, and then 2 weeks later they've got their project file and they're hiring people and doing stuff. I take a much slower approach with it, and I try to just a little bit more specific with the kind of stuff that I'll green light, but it really depends on the person.
Yeah, that is like a big struggle for like a lot of people, just to figure out like what works and what doesn't. Yeah,
catching the creativity can always be such a hard task, especially with such a blank slate to work with.
Creativity's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe these two can make their own indie horror game in the future.
I looked at Unity once and I was like, oh no, what's going on? Let alone
Unreal Engine. Anywho, so not too long ago, you've released Nightmare Mode for the game. And I'm well aware that it's like insanely difficult from what I understand. So when you were working on it, did you have any difficulties with completing it by any chance? Like, did you struggle to like conquer your own game to make sure it was stable?
You know, I didn't. But as soon as I did, that's when I knew it was ready for release. Basically, because I've played the game hundreds of times. I'm very good at it. I know how, you know, all the stuff works, how the AI acts, and I know all the different signals and signs. And so basically my goal with Nightmare Mode is that I wanted it to be difficult for even me to beat. That's how I would know if it was difficult enough. And so the initial I don't know, maybe three or four difficulties that I made, I was able to beat first try without a problem. And I was like, crap, this really isn't hard enough. And even some friends who had, done a lot of testing on the game, they tested it and they were able to beat it first try. And so that's how I knew, like, okay, this is just not, you know, because the people that are going to want to go back and revisit the game and play Nightmare Mode are probably going to be people that have played the game a handful of times or who have done speed running for it or other stuff like that. So I wanted to make sure that it was pretty difficult. So the current version of the game, or of Nightmare Mode specifically, is pretty difficult. I have not actually beat it, but I've come very, very, very close to beating it. Which is how I know it's at least possible. And other people have beaten, of course. I didn't feel like putting, an extra 10 hours in to try and beat it when I could be, you know, working on other stuff. So I did a live stream, I don't know, a couple weeks back where I tried to beat it. And I did one try, and I got all the way to the boss fight, and I had Charles down to probably, like, 5% or 10% of his health, and I ran out of scraps to repair my train with because I accidentally spent like 20 or 30 scraps on an upgrade during the boss fight when I was trying to spend them on repairs. So I almost got it.
That sucks.
But not quite.
So talking about coming back to the game a lot, have you seen a lot of the challenges that people have actually done on Tutu Charles? Like, some people have tried to save Eugene at the start, or like in the game without the train, or et cetera, or something else.
I have seen those. Yeah, I've seen those ones specifically. Those would have been done by, I know the saving you. Well, actually, a couple of people did that. Horoscoped was the first one to do that, and then Astral Smith did it as well. And then I know that there have been a couple of no train runs. And actually, my brother was the first person to do a no train run.
Oh, done.
He did that when he was testing the game. So there's no videos of it, but it was done even before launch. So it was confirmed that it could be done. So I've seen some of the challenges. I think I've seen some other ones where people do like no upgrades, or I don't know. I mean, there's not really too many challenges other than that, and like speed running.
Yeah,
I enjoy seeing those. Those are cool.
I personally tried being it while walking backwards the whole time.
Oh my god,
that was a struggle.
Honestly, like a no W key run.
Yeah.
Honestly, the fact that like there are so many like custom made challenges for people to complete, that's like, in my opinion, that's like a really good sign for a game. And he's dead again. Oh, you're back.
He's been revived.
That's very cool.
I think Two Stars Existence is flickering, guys. We should probably hurry.
I'm fading out.
He's fading.
Charles is gonna steal him away.
Yeah, as I was saying, just the amount of customizability for challenges for the game. That's like one of the biggest positives like you could have for a game. And yeah. I just think that's really cool, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always good when games are like a little bit less linear, you know, give players a little bit of, choice to try things out, be creative, and, you know, approach things in a slightly different way. So, yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Back to like, let's get back to the topic of like development-wise. So, were there like any challenges when working on the main game from scratch for Choo-Choo Charles at all?
At all, yes. Yeah. That's all of it.
the whole thing.
Yeah, game development is just going from one confusing, challenging issue to confusing, challenging issue. There's maybe 10% of the time where things are easy and you know what you're doing. Everything else is just a challenge. The biggest ones would have been anything AI related. So like Charles AI, it took pretty much all of development, tweaking and changing and adjusting and fixing Charles AI in order to get it into a state where it's actually fun. And that's one of those things where like you might hear that and it doesn't sound like it should be complicated, or like a spider train AI could be fun or unfun. But so much time went into perfecting his patrolling patterns and the timing of, you know, when he appears and when he doesn't, and controlling the likelihood of when he'll appear, and you know, making sure that it's not too difficult but difficult enough, or making sure that players are given enough warning time before he attacks them, or making sure that he's not too difficult, or making sure he doesn't run too fast, and balancing all of that with the train upgrades. And so balancing his whole AI system was very challenging. Similar kind of thing with the cultist AI, getting them functional was incredibly difficult.
Yeah,
probably more difficult than even Charles' AI, and it's still not good. Like the cultist AI is still bad. I low-key regret adding them to the game at all, because the stealth sections are one of the most hated parts of the game.
Imagine trying to do that backwards. You know, that's what I was doing.
Basically, yeah. TLDR programming tired.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's one of the main reasons I have not gone into game development, because just programming seems so daunting in my tiny little mind.
It can be complicated.
I mean, Jackson. Oh, sorry. You go ahead.
I wasn't about to say anything.
Oh, you sure?
I'm not I can remember.
Well, I mean, I would support you if you actually got into game development.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I have an idea, but like, you never know.
Yeah.
Well, so as of the recording of this video, the console ports for the game will be out tomorrow. So what was it like working on it? Like, did you ever expect it to like ever come to consoles? Did you ever expect it to like make it at all?
Yeah. So pretty early on in development, like probably just within a couple months after releasing just the announcement trailer for the game, you know, once it was getting all the traction and, you know, everybody was kind of getting excited for it, that's when I kind of realized, okay, it would probably make sense to release this on consoles, because there's definitely enough interest around it that I could justify, you know, paying for, you know, a porting studio to work on this, or getting a publisher, which I didn't end up doing. So pretty early on, I knew that console was a serious possibility. And then by the time that, you know, I released the game on PC, I was, you know, promising like, yes, don't worry, this is going to be out on, you know, Xbox and PlayStation at the very least. So what I ended up doing was, right after the PC launch, I started looking into, you know, other studios that could help me port it, as well as, you know, talking with publishers and stuff. But publishers are, I have strong feelings about publishers.
I blame you.
And
yeah, same.
So I ended up finding a studio called Warp Digital, and they do a lot of co-development and porting for other companies. So I hired them to take the game code and get it optimized and formatted correctly to run on Xbox One, Xbox Series, PlayStation 4 and 5, and Switch as well. So that process took pretty much this entire year. About 8 months that I was actually working with them. But then it was, you know, months before that, just trying to find, you know, the right company to work with. And, you know, working with them was great. They made a very, very difficult and complicated process a little bit less difficult and complicated. Because working with the console platforms it's kind of a pain. It's kind of a pain. Every single platform has their own kind of quirks and differences in how they handle game builds and submissions and the things that they do allow and don't allow. Yeah. You know, on PC, for example, like if I wanted to release a patch or an update. I could just go onto my computer here, fix up some bugs in Unreal Engine, export it, upload it to Steam, and have an update out in like 10 minutes, maybe less. It's very easy to work with Steam and PC and all that. If I wanted to release a patch like that on Nintendo, for example, that would take me at least 10 days just in approvals alone. And then the upload process is much more complicated. That can take hours to do. And if the update doesn't get approved, then you have to either go through a process of like arguing with Nintendo as to why they should let you publish this patch, or you have to redo everything and resubmit for another 10-day approval period. And it's similar kind of things with the other platforms as well. PlayStation is a little bit quicker. I think Xbox still takes a little bit of approval time. That's just like one example, you know. So consoles are very difficult.
They seem very, very stressful. Having to wait 10 days and then it being denied, and then once it actually goes through and you might have missed something, and then you have to do another 10 days.
Right.
That must take a long time.
And it's like that for everything as well. You know, when it comes to if you're trying to submit your pricing, if you're trying to submit your store page, if you're trying to change something on your store page, if you're trying to, you know, and all the platforms are different in how they handle stuff. And so dealing with support on all these different platforms, it's very unintuitive.
Yeah.
I don't explain things very well. And, you know, it's like ultimately it makes sense as to why things are a little bit more complicated. And, you know, I don't really blame them for it, obviously. They're doing their thing. And if I want to be on their platform, I got to play by their rules. That's just how it is. But it is complicated.
I did see your latest video, by the way, on your channel. And you did say you have NDAs with these platforms?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's all kinds of, like on Steam, for example, like I could, if I wanted to, show screen recordings of like some of the back end stuff on Steam. I could show, I don't know, how I set up a store page or something like that. But like all the consoles and everything or like dev kits is another one, is like I can't show the game running on a dev kit. I can't show footage of dev kits. I could show screen recordings of the game itself, but I can't show anything that is dev kit specific. And if I did, I would get nuked. So it's
God. No. Oh boy.
I'll praise Steam, thank God you have that.
All right, boys, let's go sign some NDAs with 2-star games.
Yeah.
Let's join the team.
Yeah.
Hey, Gavin, so
an NDA.
Wait, Jackson, ask him if we can get hired. Huh?
I said don't push it, boy.
All right, okay, fine. I'll stop. We'll talk about it later, then, 2-star.
Well, right, speaking later, of teams, what is it like being a solo developer? Because I know you've done a lot of your stuff on your own, and you've had a little help here and there, but you've mostly developed a lot of your stuff solo.
Yeah, for sure. So for me, working solo has largely been an obligation because until Choo Choo Charles came out, I was broke, so I couldn't afford to hire people. It's one of these things where a lot of people really don't understand that hiring people is really expensive. If I wanted to hire 3 people for like a 2-year project, that cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Jeez.
Like think about how much, you know, people make in wages, multiply that by, you know, however many years you're working for the company. Multiply that by the number of employees and then tack on an extra, I don't know, 15 or 20% for other miscellaneous expenses and taxes related to hiring people. And it's, man, I can't tell you how many times I've been told by just people in comment sections or all this stuff, like, why don't you just hire people? It's like, bro, that's, I don't have money for that.
I don't understand the ins and outs of like how much it actually is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's wildly expensive. So that's the main reason as to why I've never hired people.
Wait, so like,
at least full-time people.
Wait, so how many people usually come up to you and ask you that, like you should like hire people without knowing that it's expensive?
Oh, I mean, I've seen it hundreds of times.
Oh God.
Yeah, so it is kind of interesting seeing the disconnect where people don't quite realize that money is kind of a limiting factor when you're broke. So
yeah,
it is kind of tough. So I have hired a couple of people for like smaller things, like for music and for voice acting. Those are things that I can't really do myself. So I've hired those out to contractors. Same thing with Warp. I contracted them. So I didn't hire employees specifically, but I contracted them for, you know, the duration of the porting process. And, you know, so that's all been good. And I'm not against hiring people in the future. It's just one of those things where it's like my budget doesn't really allow for it, you know, and it's also just very complicated. You know, it's a completely different process, you know, to have like just like two or three employees versus making games solo. You know, if you've got two or three employees, you're not making games. At that point, you are a manager. You're sending emails, you're making Trello boards,
yeah,
you're attending meetings, you're paying bills. It's completely different. And I've got friends who have gone down that route and they miss actually making games. You know, it works for some people, for some companies, you know, depending on what your goals are. But for me, it's like, I really just genuinely enjoy making games. And I want to be like hands-on programming stuff and then doing art. And like, I enjoy the variety of it. So for me working solo, I think even if I had the budget to hire on a, you know, a team of 10 people for a 5-year project or something, I probably still wouldn't, because I don't want to be a manager. You know, I want to be actually making stuff.
You prefer the nitty-gritty of the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Honestly, just budget alone is like what I struggle with too, to be honest. Like, just working on personal projects, just, yeah, I can see why you prefer to work alone.
Yeah, it's definitely a simpler way of doing things.
It's not an easy task.
No, it's not easy, but
yeah,
it's, in my opinion, less stressful. More work, but less stress.
You're right on that. It definitely can take on a lot of stress, and then that's when it leads to your health, and you know, you got to take care of yourself first. And
yeah. Just been working on the podcast, or
just in general.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff in the background as well.
Well, like, how did the okay, so this is something I was excited to actually ask you. How did Choo Choo Charles and Garten of Ban Ban, the collaboration happen? How did that happen?
Yeah, this is, I enjoy having the opportunity to talk about this. So I've known the Euphoric Brothers for many years now, probably going on 4 or 5 years at this point. Long before I made Choo Choo Charles, long before they made Garten of Ban Ban. And so when Ban Ban was, you know, they were working on all that stuff, they asked me, they're like, hey, so we had this idea. You know how we've got like these dream sequences? Because in Garten of Ban Ban, there's these like kind of goofy dream sequences where like just crazy stuff happens and it's just kind of goofy, shitposty, just funny stuff.
Yeah.
And they were like, so we were thinking of trying to get a hold of all of like a bunch of mascot horror games and get like a bunch of mascot horror monsters in this dream sequence. And just a goofy, I don't remember exactly what the plan was for all of them, but they asked if I'd be down to have Choo Choo Charles in. I was like, fuck yeah, that sounds awesome. That'd be hilarious. And so later on we talked about it some more, and It was pretty funny. So I had met up with them for the first time, and we were having dinner, and they were explaining like the whole like concept of the dream sequence with Charles coming in out of nowhere and trying to eat Ban Ban, and then Nab Nab comes along and suppresses him with his spider energy. And I was just like, that's just funny. That's funny. I like that. So, yes, I sent him over all the like models and textures and everything, and we got it set up, and it was great. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people didn't like it. there were some people that got so
you're aware,
ridiculously emotionally attached to the fact that Charles was in Ban Ban. And I don't
know. Oh my god.
I think that broke a lot of people, especially me.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Like I remember like Daco's reaction to it.
That was a good one.
I remember seeing it and I was just so thrown back, and I was like, what just happened on my screen? It was just all sat around the campfire, and all of a sudden, Choo Choo Charles flies onto the screen.
No, because like when I saw the video myself as well, like as soon as I started hearing Choo Choo Charles, I'm like, wait a minute, is that who I think it is? And then and then it shows up, and I'm like, oh shit, here we go.
That's definitely a highlight.
That made a lot of people do like a double take on reality.
I've seen like the their like reaction compilation videos of, I think the titles of them, there's one of them where it's like everyone losing their mind to Choo Choo Charles and Garten of Ban Ban 4, and it's like it's an accurate title. It's pretty funny, but yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like it's just funny to me, you know, like, and I enjoy that, like as a solo developer, and like I can make calls like that. I can just do that, and nobody could tell me otherwise. You know, that's just one of those things that I just enjoy being able to do. And you know, I mean, I've seen people just that are like, "Oh, this has tainted the name of Charles. Oh, how could Two Star have done this? How dare he, bro? Doesn't he realize what he's done? He has forever tainted the name of Charles." Like, bro, it's not that serious. You know, it's a goofy spider train in the goofy kindergarten game. And it's just fun. It's just fun. So that's the story of Ban Charles.
I mean, it was definitely a highlight of the Ban Ban entire series. So it definitely hit a mark on there.
That's, for a second, I thought you were going to say it tainted the entirety of the Garten of Ban Ban for a second.
No,
it was the first stamp on the series.
Oh. That's one hell of a story I'd have to listen to for today. Thank you for that.
It has been enlightening. So, speaking of Charles, I'm going to be speaking for a lot of fans, but do you have any plans for us to see Charles again? Maybe in a crossover or something, or a standalone game?
You know, there's always the possibility. There's always the possibility that I might do some more stuff with Charles, or, you know, crossovers with other games. I mean, I've done a couple crossovers with some other titles. I did one with another train game. What it was called, though? Station to Station, I think. They had Charles in their game for a brief period of time. I will say my next game is not Choo Choo Charles related at all. It's completely different. And it's very different from anything else I've made in the past, even. I don't have any plans to make a Choo Choo Charles sequel. Again, not saying I never would, or that it would never happen in some way or another. So
pretty much what you're trying to tell us is that you neither confirm or deny.
I mean, I'm denying any major Choo Choo Charles content within like the next probably 2-3 years.
Well, there goes my next flight to off the world. I'm leaving this planet now. I'm sad now. No, I actually want to cry now.
Please, we're recording.
It's okay. Put your head on my shoulder.
Oh, thank you so much, Gavin. I love you for that.
But yeah, I think it's really nice that you're focusing on like other personal projects instead of just like, well, for lack of a better word, banking off like your big head game. I think that's really respectable.
I mean, I hope people can, you know, see it that way. I mean, it's one of these things where I know a lot of people will be kind of disappointed about it. But you know, it's kind of one of these things where, like, I mean, I feel like it happens way too often where developers, they get their one big hit and they never move on from it. And then they just make more games of that are for like the next decade. And just, you know, kind of like I was saying earlier, I enjoy variety. Like, I need variety in like what I'm doing, what I'm working on. You know, that's a big part of why I like game development as much as I do. And I just can't work on a project for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, sequel after sequel after sequel. I spent 3.5 years working on My Beautiful Paper Smile, and that was tedious towards the end of that. And if I was to be making a Charles sequel, that would easily be pushing this whole IP into the 4-year period. So it's just one of those things where, like, I just need that variety personally, you know, and I've got other ideas that I want to make. I've got other interests and genres that I'm into. You know, hopefully people will stick around for that. And, hopefully, you know, the new projects and like the game that I'm working on now, are received well, but you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's something I'm looking forward to, though.
At the end of the day, it's your choice. You're the creator. You're the one that's envisioning the entire project. So you do you, my guy.
For sure. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
That was interesting. So is there anything you'd like to say to people who enjoy Choo Choo Charles and all the fans out there to you who are watching?
I guess thanks for enjoying Choo Choo Charles. I'm glad that you did. And also subscribe to the Indie Horror Talk podcast, broskies. You got to do it.
Thank you so much, Gavin. That's
brilliant, man.
Yeah, thank you very much for being on the podcast. And again, it's an honor to like talk face, well, not face to face, but like screen to screen, kind of.
For sure. Yeah. Hey, I appreciate it. It was a fun conversation. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Well, I think we can just wrap it up here for now until the next episode. And thank you, Gavin, for making an appearance on our podcast. And thank you to our co-host, James and Jackson, for this one. So is there anything else you guys would like to say before we end it off here?
Well, Choo Choo Charles should be on Xbox and PlayStation when you're watching this. So go take a look.
I got nothing. I was going to make a ban joke, but yeah.
Oh, no. Okay.
I'm only human.
It's okay. No, but like genuinely though, we'll see you all next time until the next episode.